Hey folks, welcome to episode 2 of the Empowering Ability Podcast.
Welcome to the Empowering Ability Podcast, where we get you and your loved ones impacted by disability the information needed to live a full and meaningful life. Now here is your host, Eric Gall.
Hey folks, welcome back to the Empowering Ability Podcast. Today's guest is Tom Mahoney from Freedom 55 Financial, and Tom is a licensed financial advisor, and Tom is also a father of a 25-year-old autistic son. So Tom brings in a really interesting perspective and life experience into this conversation today. And Tom and I talk about the life stages that a special needs family go through, and what are the financial questions and thoughts that parents, siblings, and folks that have a disability, what should they be thinking about as they move through those life stages? So here's Tom. Tom, welcome to the Empowering Ability Podcast. How are you?
I'm great, Eric. Thank you.
Excellent. Thanks for coming on the show today. Really appreciate it. And Tom, you've been telling me a little bit about your story, and I think it'd be a lot of value just to give, if you can give your version of your story at a high level to our listeners. And maybe you can just start by explaining how you became a licensed financial advisor, specifically focused at those impacted by disability and special needs families.
Oh, well, thanks. So, Eric, first of all, thanks for the invitation. I'm not a shy person in this regard, and I love the opportunity of sharing my story. And hopefully that, you know, it provides a lot of assistance or just thought provoking for other families. From my own background, I used to be a corporate individual within the field of sports and entertainment with Molson Breweries. In 1991, I had my third child, and we recognized there was something wrong or different about my son. And within the next 2 years of wondering and testing and just all those ups and downs of, we know things aren't right, what is it? My son was deemed autistic. Through that process, and just to bring you from there to today, I've probably gone through 5 career changes. I've probably been on every emotional roller coaster ride that any parent could possibly imagine, both relationship wise as well as family wise. I mentioned it's my third child. I have 2 other children. However, within that process, I've kind of had a very knack for financial, for figures and planning. And I looked at a huge need within the special needs community within Ontario on the basis of, what do families do? Because we did not at that time have a tremendous amount of government supports, how are we going to move forward as a family with all of those needs? There was really very little advice out there and how to navigate the education system, support registering, long-term financial planning can we do, what type of insurance should we as a family have, what are our risks, what about the siblings, how does everybody evolve within this family, both emotionally and as well as in a support function, in a support universe, so to speak. So through all that, I did become a licensed financial advisor. I have learned or specialized in the special needs families, trying to find out every government support that is out there. But then again, what other financial products are out there, from life insurance to long-term disability insurance to critical insurance? What products are available to support that family, recognizing that there's only so much money to go around at that time, for each family. There's only so much income. So within all that, the whole scope or the objective for me personally is, how do we move our family, special needs family member, forward so that they can have a smile on their face the rest of their life, and at the same time achieve that challenge and that mountain we as a family unit have to climb in order to survive this process with smiles on our faces at the same time.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for sharing your journey. And you're a guy that's lived it. You're a guy that's showing other people the path, or helping them define their path. And here's the million-dollar question. Where do I start?
The starting point, I should reference, who am I? How old am I? And then what I've done is I call it the circle of the special needs family life. And that circle's divided into five very distinct pieces. Okay. Now, the first piece is from birth to 5 years old, 4 or 5 years old. The second piece is from primary grade school, which would be early junior kindergarten, till the completion of primary school. So that would be the second piece, from 5 to about 14 years of age. All this representing the physical age of our family, special need family member. The third phase would be from 14 to 21, and that's the time period our family member is in high school. The fourth phase would be from 21 to the day that we pass away, and then the fifth phase is from the day that we have passed away to the full lifespan of our special needs family member.
Right. So you make a fantastic point that your starting point really depends on what stage you're at, right? When that relates to financial planning.
Well, yeah, and financial planning is a lot more than, you know, I've invested my money, and I'm a diversified circle of, you know, bonds, stocks, U.S. equity funds, Asian equity funds. I'm in Europe. So I've got a pretty integrated, portfolio of investments. I look at that and say, well, that's terrific. I'm really happy for you. That's very wise from an investment standpoint. But let's go back over here and say, what have I done to protect the family? You know, is it best to spend money today so I don't have to have that those economic expenses at a later time period? Am I protected from, certainly from a life insurance standpoint, but am I protected from a critical insurance standpoint? People forget that you have the likelihood of 18 times more of being hit with, be it heart attack, episode with cancer, than you do with, accidentally passing away. So if something happened to you from an income standpoint, how much of a hit can you take as a household? What preparations are we doing, or what is it that we physically can do to make sure that we have at least checked off these boxes for investigation purposes? Right. In the same way, when I talk finances and people say, I have a very integrated portfolio, I go, okay, well, from a life protection standpoint, you have all your money into life insurance. Well, that's like saying I have all my money in bonds. There's much more to life protection than just one application. And then what is it with all these, with family members? I can have grandparents, for example, who have RRSPs. Well, I can actually roll over grandparents' RRSPs into a registered disability savings plan for my family member. There's a lot of financial tools that can be, supportedly set up for our family member. I've got special disability trusts that I can set up for my family member. I've got informal funds that I can set up for my special needs family member that never cuts into things like ODSP. Now, for a lot of the things that I'm mentioning now, would that make absolutely no sense for individuals in the first, slice of the circle from 0 to 4 years of age, when I'm talking about government programs that are made available, both provincially and federally, but they make all the sense in the world for families, who are now into that third slice and quite frankly, in that second slice.
So with that said, Tom, the listeners to this podcast are going to be kind of all over the map, right? Some of them might be in that first slice, some of them might be in the fifth slice, and all the way in between. So Would we be able to walk through each of those slices, and could we talk to maybe one or two key points or key questions that those families should be asking when it pertains to accessing resources or talking specifically about finances?
Sure, certainly. Let's talk about the first slice, for example.
Okay.
Okay. Here, my family member, now we're going through diagnosis. We have a diagnosis, and now they're going into primary grade school, okay, junior kindergarten. We'll say they're up to the next 5 years of grade school. My experience was that every penny that I could put into programming for speech pathology, trying to get fine motor skills from a physical disability standpoint. My son had seizures, going through that process. Specialists, starting to work on behavioral skills. My son was nonverbal. My son was, self-abusive. He was a runner. He used to take off out of the house. So making sure everybody in the neighborhood was aware that, hey, if you see this kid in your, he loved videos. My son's a video movie nut.
Yeah.
That's his one love in life. And he would actually check people's doors. He would escape the house. He'd check people in the neighborhood's doors to see if he could get into their house, find all their VCR tapes and start going through them. He would rewire their VCR system so that he could make it work. And they'd come home and find him watching VCR, movies in their house because they forgot to lock the front door, type of thing.
Just so, watching Batman in the basement.
Yeah, over and over and over again. So it's, so all of these challenges, all of our family members are very unique. So, but getting back to that 0 to 5 years old, I got a lot of realities that I've got to find out, but early treatment is paramount to the long-term success of our family member. Now, I'm speaking certainly to, from a cognitive standpoint, or cognitive disability standpoint. But let's even, I have clients who have the same issue with physical disabilities, that the more treatment and supports that we can get in place and workings with while the family member is young, the better long term they will be. Okay. And that's certainly what our long-term objective is.
Right. And you're talking about from a health and meaningful life perspective, but I think also underlying that is a financial perspective as well.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm kind of categorizing things now from a financial perspective.
Okay.
Every discretionary dollar has a purpose. So what's the best purpose of that discretionary dollar? Recognizing that at a young age, the cost of a family, it's a measurement of, income versus expense. Mm-hmm. So after all expenses, just normal household expenses, do I have left over, and what's the best application of those funds?
So at a young age, 0 to 4, 0 to 5, it's investing in health and in your son or daughter's capability. Moving into that next stage, into that primary schooling, what are the things that parents should be looking at and thinking about?
Well, there's two things. One, you're always looking at what supports are available at the same time. In the primary days, within all this process, you have, within the Ontario government, special services at home. So you're also applying for support resources to bring in specialists. But as a family, never forget, when I got a special needs family member, I can't leave them alone. How do we grocery shop? How do we do this? How do we do that? How do we plan these things? Do our career paths match what our long-term thought process is? These are all questions that you got to ask yourselves so that you're prepared, and it's better to always work off of what your plan is versus reacting to someone else's plan.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, that's a life lesson, I guess, for all of us at all times.
Right.
You always are always trying to define my path versus someone else defining it, that I have to react to what their definition of what my path should be.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Take control of your own destiny.
Always, you know, easy words to say, but really it's very difficult at times to follow, you know, to make that move or to make those changes. But someone's got to challenge you on those particular questions. I guess a lot of times that's what I bring to the, you know, to the party or to the mix, where I lead down to these hard questions. We can't change reality, and wishful thinking will always be wishful thinking. But again, we always try and manage the planning that we do. We ask all those questions so that they don't slap us or come back and slap us up in the face.
Right.
Enough said, you know, in that particular arena.
Yeah.
However, I do want to make application for every government grant process that's available for support resources. Okay.
Okay.
Now, once we get into school, our lives as a family change. Hopefully our incomes have increased. You know, I have more support resources. Hopefully I've got school buses picking up my child versus me having to drive my child to and from every, you know, program stint. They will now be in school throughout the daytime. How is my, you know, do I get back into a career? Do I change my career and work from home? Do we have more income coming in? How do I protect my household? How do I, you know, do everything I can to ensure that I'm still providing the programming for my family member? I'm taking care of and trying to provide every assistance I can to, if I have other children, or, you know, to their future planning. And number three, I'm taking care of ourselves, myself and my partner, or myself. You got to always take care. I guess there's one principle I always have had. The successful families, the parent, the family heads, the house head of the households, the leadership of each family unit has to be taken care of. If they falter, the rest of the family falls. And it's a difficult understanding for parents. And I'm saying this because I personally faltered in this area. I didn't take care of myself well enough. I was always worried about everybody else. But someone's got to come in and say, we got to take care of you, because if you're not taken care of, the whole house falls down.
Right. It's that principle of, hey, the airplane's going down, and put on your oxygen mask first before you try and put others on.
Absolutely.
Help them with their oxygen mask.
Perfect example. But you got to have yours on before you can help them.
Right.
Right. So if that is done and thought of and you know, and someone that's a supportive role and kind of that I play. My job, I always believe, is a partnership with the parent or the heads of the household. Sometimes parents isn't the right word, because it is, as in your case, it could be siblings. But whoever is helping or heading this household for the special needs family, they need support, they need help, they need discussion, and they need guidance. And, you know, hence that's, you know, going back to, against the reason for my practice, I'm empathetic towards that, but it also gives me great satisfaction where I'm a partner in this process, you know, and we challenge and we move through each of those slices, you know. So now we, as I was mentioning, but, you know, we've dealt with slice one, we've now in slice two. Now let's get into slice three. I have government supports. Now is the time to set up and looking at registered disability savings plans. A lot of families will look at that earlier, but the registered disability savings plan is a whole presentation unto itself. The things that I can do, the rules, regulations that provide. But the bottom line is, once our family member achieves the age of 18, the measurement for benefit from the government for grant is based on their income, not the household income.
Okay.
So there being, when you turn 18, they're, I'm making assumptions here, but let's say they now qualify for Ontario Disability Support Program. So they can receive up to $900, you know, $900 to $1,000 a month for lack of a better word, for room and board. Okay. They also get full medical coverage and dental coverage, which really is the most valuable component of ODSP.
Okay.
But based on that $10,000, however, if that's their maximum income, for every dollar I put into a registered disability savings plan, up to $1,500 a year, the government will put in $3. So up until the age of 49. Okay.
That's a pretty good investment. 300% right off the bat.
300% plus all growth.
Right.
Now, what happens to that is it's like an RRSP. As the individual pulls that money out, they are taxed at the rate that they, you know, they pull it out at, not like a maximum highest taxable margin rate that you would have for RRSPs. I'm starting to go down that road of speaking about specific products, but if I can get one thing across in all this, there are so many tools, so many assets, so many different pieces that really can fit into this jigsaw puzzle. And it is a jigsaw puzzle. And there are multiple pieces to this puzzle from a family standpoint, from a financial standpoint, from an emotional standpoint. And they all, the best package is when all the pieces fit together. But it's also knowledge of all the different pieces that can be placed into this puzzle.
Right. And as kids are graduating high school or finishing up high school, what are the questions that the family should be asking or thinking about in that stage?
Well, the transition from high school to the next phase is totally dependent on how well we have done in the previous three slices or three phases. Okay. So our family member has progressed life skill, you know, behavioral. So whatever that product of our family member is at 21 deems what supports are going to be have to be put in place for the rest of our family member's life. For example, let me just use an example that when I was going through high school, we were doing an IEP process, and they were always trying to talk about academics. And I looked at them and I said, I don't care about academics. My son academically is never going to be post-secondary. The time I have right now with you on our IEP, it must be focused on behavioral skill, okay, as well as life skill.
And because Tom, what's an IEP, just for our listeners that might not know?
IEP is an individual education plan.
Okay, perfect.
So what happens is that it's like here, instead of us following a grade 10 Ministry of Education curriculum for the province of Ontario, we have this individualized education plan. So it's deemed, our family member has been deemed special. Therefore, they're really not going for that certificate after grade 12 that I have successfully completed the 12, you know, the grade 12 curriculum to progress now to post-secondary education. When our family member gets is some type of certificate of congratulations at 21, you know, that you've attended high school, and that's about it. It's not deemed academically any type of academic achievement. So, but now this, once again, this is not in all cases. I gotta throw this caveat in again, that some individuals with special needs can move forward into post-secondary education. They are developing programs for them, but they are deemed being able to go with additional support. And it could be an individual going with them, could be a buddy system. There's, you know, again, comes back to the individuals, but the spectrum is wide, the spectrum is large. I'll deal, you know, I can only, you know, right now reference my own son, being fair, that post-secondary education was never a consideration, yet within the high school, they're always deeming, you know, he's not doing well in history, or that. I say, I really don't care. My focus now is, what's his behavior like within social circle? Is he, because a lot of our special needs family members, as they physically grow, get very large. I have family members where their child, I call them child now, their young adult is 21 years of age, weighs 220 pounds, and their parents combined are soaking wet, are 130 pounds, and the behavior is aggressive with their family member. And what happened was they didn't spend enough time when they were younger really treating or working with this aggressiveness. What can we do to manage this aggressiveness? What behavioral approaches and learnings can we put in place so that at 21, they're not looked upon, and I'm trying to find the right words here. I don't want to reference a threat, but there are a lot of individuals who must have, you know, a one-to-one support resource. There are individuals who need two-to-one support resources because they have physical, you know, emotional outbursts. They're physically aggressive. So everything that we can do to prepare our individual to transition back into community, you know, we always talk about embracing, we are members of the community, but there's a responsibility on us that our family members must be capable of being embraced by the community. Right. So every behavioral issue that we can focus on in those primary years is so important when they achieve the age of 21, because now I no longer have the education system with EAs, with teachers, all these support resources looking after my family member. I've got to now provide all those support resources for my family member. And what happens is, you know, and they have become frontline news stories with parents who have dropped their you know, their family members off at community living or the Ministry of Community and Social Services, because that the parents are, they deem, I'm lost. I can't take care of this individual and survive at the same time.
Right.
Right. So again, those slices all lead us up to that, you know, that proverbial cliff at 21. Where does my family member go, and what supports are going to be necessary for them to move into now community programming? If we've done a good job, or if with combined with our family member's capability, hopefully we can provide training into some type of work, volunteer work, or some type of job capability, you know, as society progresses or welcomes our family members into them, which, once again, that's a whole nother story about, you know, community, that acceptance of our family members versus being hidden away, which presently still takes place. We forget in this transition that in that 7 years of teenagehood and young adulthood, our family members have been in large communities in the high school environment. Well, at 21, they lose that. And now they are sequestered over into, once again, into special needs community versus the integrated community within community living or, you know, private day programs that, the private sector is starting to set up. So it's a huge transition for our family member.
Right, right. So there's that big transition, the cliff, as you referenced, and then, hopefully integrated into community life. So what happens when, really it's the stage of life where you're at? Your son, you mentioned, is 25, you're 62, and now you're looking at the future and past that. What are some questions that maybe you're thinking about yourself with your own family?
Yeah, well, my whole focus now is looking at, you know, I recognize I probably, knock on wood, I've got 15 solid years before I deal with numbers. Reality being what it is, that some type of, medical issue may come up for me over my next 15 years. And my son's certainly getting 15 years older. So my whole focus now is trying to find a right transition for him, maybe 10 years down the road. I think we can coexist in the same household. But after 10 years, where is he then going to move into? And I'm trying to structure that stream where he is going to, from a transition standpoint, move on to that next phase of his own life. Now, it may be with a sibling. It may be with the community supports. That will all, come under fire, I guess, in the future. But you do your best, and then certainly the long-term financial supports that I can have in place, for him, to support him, and anything I can source, from, be it, family, other extended family members or whatever, always having oversight, over my son's life. It's funny. You just made me think of a certain dynamic where, when you have siblings or with my son's siblings, one of the challenges is, even for them, it brings me back to one of the biggest crises of my my other son and daughter was when they looked at the challenges that I was going through with my son, they said, geez, what's going to happen when, you know, dad goes? Are we going to be, you know, looking after him for the rest of our lives? What does that do to our life? You know, how do they manage that thought process without talking to them about it?
Right.
Where I had one family member actually become very depressed over it, saying, I got this dream I want to achieve. Well, I'll never be able to achieve it if I'm stuck looking after, you know, with my brother living with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah, it can be,
right?
It can be a weight or a heaviness. I'm a sibling, right? So
right.
With my sister, Sarah, and thinking about, you know, once my parents aren't able to care for her, what does that look like? And I know my parents don't want to leave me with that responsibility either. So it's working together, to plan what that looks like and be proactive about it. And there's financial implications with that too, right? Like you mentioned housing and support and who helps to manage all of that as well. So those are questions that we're answering as a family.
Sure. And in again, I mean, that goes back to the financial planning, but you're answering that at your present age. And I'm thinking back, you know, what, you know, when you're, you know, going back to what I was mentioning about family, how that really can affect siblings at the age of 13, 14, 15 years old.
Right.
You know, and it really, you know, all of a sudden you see grades going down or, and they, you know, one of them said, why bother? Well, you know, what do I have to look forward to?
Yeah.
Because they had that perception that they would be responsible long-term wise, taking over the role that they presently saw me in. And again, just going back to the, I guess one of the fundamental pieces to this conversation is that we're talking about a family here as much as just a special needs family member, and that everybody within, you know, that within the family are affected and recognize how this effect can, you know, cause and the reactions that can come out of those causes. It can change people's paths, you know, tremendously without you recognizing what the heck is going on.
Right. And Tom, as you've walked us through these life stages and brought in your own experience, I feel like you've been painting this picture in front of me, and it's just given so much clarity around what a special needs family experiences and the things that should be considered along that path. And I think that through the conversation, you've provided a ton of value to families, no matter what stage of that path, and given them some questions to start thinking about and the financial implications of those decisions that they have in front of them. So super grateful that you took the time to jump on the podcast here with us today. And Tom, how can folks reach out to you to either have a conversation or to connect with you?
Sure. Anybody who hears, and again, I invite at any questions about any challenges that you're faced with or directions or misinformation, or there is a lot of misinformation, you know, that is applied. So if anybody's ever got a question, they can reach me at tom.mahoney@f55f.com.
Okay, perfect. Thanks so much, Tom. I'm looking forward to continuing these conversations because there's a lot more things that we can get a lot deeper into. We talk about some of the financial products such as RRSPs here in Canada. So, or sorry, RDSPs here in Canada. There's RRSPs too, but I'm looking forward to continuing those conversations and having you back on the show.
Oh, Eric, I appreciate it very much. And again, I know that we're just dealing kind of with a top line, emotional line. But once you get across that, then you get into the specifics of each barrier. What is it that I physically can do both to protect myself, my family, and prepare my family member for the – it's a journey. But, you know, a lot of people look at you with sympathy. And I go, if people only realize what this journey can be, it's probably the most exciting adventure you're ever going to be able to be on. And with adventure comes highs and comes lows, but you're always glad and you always have a smile on your face every day.
Well said, Tom. I couldn't agree more. All right. Thank you, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for the opportunity. Take care.
What a pleasure speaking with Tom today, and you can hear the experience that Tom brings into the financial conversation with his experience with his own family, and he really provides an idea of what that life journey and that path looks like, and he really speaks to how it's different for everybody, and it's, you know, you choose your own adventure depending on your own circumstances. Please connect with us and join the conversation over at Empowering Ability on Facebook, and join us for episode 3 with Joanna Good, who is the director of Facilitation Wellington Dufferin. And Joanna and I chat about friendship. We talk about support circles and independent facilitation and the value that that brings to individuals with disability and their families. So we'll see you soon. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. Visit us at empoweringability.org for more podcasts and resources to help you and your loved ones impacted by disability build a full and meaningful life.